Yeah, living like we're renegades. Welcome to the Whistleblower Newsroom, a platform by whistleblowers, for whistleblowers, and about whistleblowers. I'm Christina Borgeson.
And I'm Celia Farber.
And we are whistleblowers ourselves. Whistleblowers are people who stand up for the truth when others don't. We're right here on PRN, and we're going to be confronting the unspeakable, tackling third rail issues. We're going to be as fierce and fearless as we possibly can. You want to talk about our first guest, Celia?
Sorry. So our first guest is very exciting. Very exciting conversation we're going to have. Ray McGovern is a former CIA officer, political activist, world-renowned whistleblower, Russia expert, and co-founder of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, acronym VIPS. Mr. McGovern was a CIA analyst for 27 years, serving seven U.S. presidents, starting with JFK. Upon retiring, he received the CIA's Intelligence Commendation Medal, which he returned in 2006 in a protest over the CIA's use of torture. And if his name is ringing other bells, he is an outspoken whistleblower on all of the
On Russiagate.
Yeah, the fraud. The fraud and the lies of Russiagate. And he comes at it from a very interesting and unusual angle, namely not as a quote-unquote supporter of President Trump. Quite the contrary. However, and he'll tell us all about it, how he really feels about the overall picture of this presidency and so forth. But Russiagate is another matter altogether.
Well, yeah, and the interesting thing is, you know, there's a lot of commentary. People say a lot of things. They pull a lot of things out of their left ears. But what Ray and his Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity have done is they have used their expertise to examine the forensic evidence.
And if there's one thing my co-host, Christina Borgeson, loves, it's forensic evidence.
Yes, ma'am.
I do, too.
It's a bottom line. It's a bottom line in an investigation. And this forensic evidence, interestingly enough, Mr. Mueller and the FBI were not interested in, really. They did not seize those DNC computers when it had been announced that they had been hacked. By the Russians,
the whole
allegedly.
Thing, you know, it starts out foggy and it gets foggier and foggier, this whole thing.
Well, actually, that's why we're having Ray on here, because he's a whistleblower and there's nothing foggy about...
about Ray McGovern.
Well, about his analysis with actually a couple of NSA tech geniuses, including Mr. Bill Binney.
The one and only.
Yes, the one and only. Also a whistleblower. Who experienced the same thing, by the way, that Mr. Stone just experienced recently, the 29, did he, I think he counted 29 FBI.
I have the number.
29 guns drawn to arrest him, which is.
Here it is. I have the numbers. 29 FBI agents at Roger Stone's house in Florida.
You know,
17 vehicles, two of them armored, two boats behind his house. One helicopter over his house. And people have pointed out on Twitter, only 12 Navy SEALs, by comparison, were sent for Osama bin Laden in the ostensible raid of Osama
bin Laden. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, let's face it, Roger Stone, he's not my favorite human being in terms of, certainly he's not the most honest individual on the planet, putting it mildly, but, you know, really, really, our tax dollars... In this, you know, but it's not even about the tax dollars, because the optics, what those optics say is, to me, is, you know, if they want to come to your house and you're, mm-hmm. you're not a criminal who killed somebody or
right.
robbed a bank at gunpoint or something like that, you're not a dangerous criminal. Why are they sending all those guns and hardware to your house? That's what they did to Binney, too.
Yeah.
They came, Binney. You know, he's just this tech whiz guy who worked for the NSA, wasn't even really accused of a real crime.
Yeah.
And they came to his house, put a gun in his face,
yep.
put a gun in his wife's face, terrified them.
Yeah.
You know? So This is a story that needs to get out. The story of the forensics behind the DNC computers. And another investigative tool that's always very important is a timeline to look at who was doing what before and after. And that really tells the story. And that is what Ray has done.
So I understand we have Mr. McGovern on the phone. Are
Ray,
you there?
Are you there?
I'm here. I'm glad to be with you.
Ray is the closest thing to a saint that the CIA has ever produced. Welcome, Ray.
Welcome.
That's damning with saint praise.
No. I don't know if saint and CIA are ever used in the same breath usually. It's high praise, actually. So, Ray, let's get right into it because there's a lot to be talked about. Tell us your story of the forensic evidence.
Well, for the longest time, as Russiagate took shape, we were being asked to take on faith something that no one could actually adduce any evidence for, and that was a Russian hack of the DNC computers, which in turn was given to WikiLeaks. Now, that was the argument, that was the story. And it's still a story. Evidence doesn't seem to count for much anymore, at least judging from the mainstream press. Now, with respect to forensics, as you know, we have a group that we call Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, and we were formed right before the Iraq War, 3 months before. When we saw that our profession was being, prostituted. It was being corrupted on the altar of an administration that wanted to make a war that was not necessary and needed some, quote, evidence to justify also in quotes, that war. So we get together, there were five of us in the beginning, and we warned people, we warned the president. We sent him memos formatted just as we used to do on active duty, so to speak. And we warned him that the intelligence was askew, that it was being corrupted, and it all toward the same end, justifying the war. Now, we weren't naive. We kind of thought the president was onto this, that was part of it, but we wanted to allow for the fact that Cheney was pretty much the guy behind all this and that Bush was not either fully informed or very poorly informed. So, now, fast forward, after 2003 and the attack on Iraq, which we could not prevent, and which, as we predicted, maybe it's worth just, we finished our memo, which we wrote on the same day as Colin Powell presented that bunch of lies at the UN Security Council. We said, Mr. President, Bush at the time, we strongly advise you to broaden the circle of your advisors who seem bent on a war for which we see no compelling reason and from which we believe the unintended consequences are likely to be catastrophic, end quote. And we ended on that note, and we believe that to be the case. We take no delight in having been right about that. I mean, millions of people killed in the Middle East, bedlam, chaos, ever since the attack in March of 2003. So anyhow, as we kept producing these memos and warning Bush, and after a while it became clear that we would send an open letter to Bush, and well, I just mentioned one other. July 14th, 2003, it became so clear to us that Cheney was behind this whole thing that we actually wrote a memo to the president saying that he fire his vice president. Now, that was unusual enough to get us a little press in the New York Times and elsewhere, but of course.
Well, since then, you guys have really burnished your reputation for calling things like it is, and that's why we think that this forensic evidence that you guys developed is so, at this juncture is so compelling.
Yeah, Well, in the process of those years that you just mentioned, as we were not burnishing our image, but as we were telling it like it is, you know, that used to be your ethos in intelligence analysis, you know, tell it like it is. We drew new members from places like the National Security Agency and other, virtually all the other intelligence agencies of the U.S. government, and there are 16 now. There were only 12 when I left. In any case, two former technical directors of the National Security Agency joined our ranks. One was Bill Binney. He's pretty well known in circles that are interested in the truth. The other one was Ed Loomis. Ed Loomis was the computer guy. You know, he was, you know, PhD, Princeton, studied under the real computer guys. Bill Binney is widely recognized as the smartest guy NSA ever had in its employ. He devised the systems that could cope with with the new ways of communicating. All landlines were dead. What he tried to do is figure out how you could harness the right cryptology and other computer systems so that you could handle all the stuff that was on the internet and in telephone conversations. So now, when Bill Binney looked at the evidence of a quote Russian hack.
Now, how did you guys get this evidence, by the way?
It was really easy, Christina. There wasn't any.
What do you mean? How did you get your hands on what you analyzed is my question.
It was all in Bill Binney and Ed Loomis's head.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
All right.
They knew the systems that they had devised.
Oh, I see. I get it. Okay.
And actually, Bill Binney did devise the systems. He's still using. Now, Bill was a little bit impeded from telling the full story because it was pretty sensitive, bordering on the highly classified. And then, as a blessing, Edward Snowden decided that he would not risk being interred for the rest of his life, but went east rather than west, got out, and in Hong Kong divulged incredible secrets from the NSA, including slides, you know, what we used to call view graphs, things you could project and show. Not only, now mind you, this is hard to believe, not only that NSA could and was collecting everything, okay, like all emails, like all telephone conversations.
So the NSA would have picked this up, right?
Yeah.
NSA would have picked up the Russian hack, and the NSA never said anything? Is that what you're getting at?
Well, when Bill Binney, possessed of this knowledge, got those slides from Ed Snowden, he not only could say, look, I know these systems. We collect everything. And this is how we do it.
Right.
And when people say, how you do it? He said, well, here are these slides from Ed Snowden. And we show all these, the Fairview program, all the programs that showed that everything was being collected. And not only foreign stuff. I mean, this is important for Americans to know. In gross violation of Fourth Amendment, American stuff in this country as well. So long story short, Bill started saying, look, you know, we collect everything. And I would say, Bill, come on. Everything? And he'd say, trust me, Ray, we can, and we do. And the technology allows it, and that's what we do. So the bottom line here is that they should be able to produce the evidence that Russia hacked into the DNC. And it's really weird, Ray. It's really weird that they can't produce that. And Bill very quickly decided that the reason they couldn't produce it is because it did not exist. Now, when people say, whoops, wait a second now, Ray, it was highly classified, right? I say, oh, yeah, it was until Ed Snowden brought out the slides. It's not classified anymore. And so if they had that evidence, one would reason that they would surely produce it. Now, there's a caveat here. You know, one of my unfavoritist philosophers, a fellow named Donald Rumsfeld, he went to Princeton, you know, and he learned these. Well, one of the things he learned was this axiom listen up now. This is important.
Yeah, they're...
quote, the lack, the absence of evidence is not evidence of absence, end quote. I'll say it again. The absence of evidence is not evidence.
Wait, Ray, we've got to get, I want to get to the actual details of the forensic analysis that was done. I think
sure.
that's very important.
Yeah,
and
okay.
So what is it that Bill did?
Yeah. Well, Bill was onto this very early on, and after a year, that is in mid-2017, we learned of independent forensic experts that had taken real interest in what the FBI apparently didn't take interest in for some strange reason, and they got access to metadata having to do with one of the hacks dated 5 July 2016. Looking at that metadata, it turned out that this was not a hack at all.
So one of the hacks to the DNC, they got the metadata for one of the hacks to the DNC computer.
Yeah, it was a hack done by this so-called Guccifer 2.0 person,
uh-huh.
who nobody knows who that is or whether it's a he or she or an it. But right after Julian Assange announced that he had, quote, emails relating to Hillary Clinton, end quote, and was about to publish them, all of a sudden, 2 days later, a computer outfit hired by the DNC and the Clinton campaign.
There, it's called CrowdStrike. Yeah, it's a cybersecurity entity. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they have a very, very dubious reputation, having been wrong about many things. They were hired, and they said, you know, we looked, and it was a terrible thing, and we see that there's some Russian fingerprints here. Okay, so that's... we're talking the middle of June now, okay?
Right.
So June 12th was when Assange announced it. June 14th, CrowdStrike says, oh, we looked at the computers, and there's signs of Russian meddling. And then on the next day, Guccifer 2.0 arises out of the ashes and says, CrowdStrike is right, and we did it, and we're working for the Russians and WikiLeaks.
Oh, wow.
You know, that time sequence is very, very interesting because it was, 3 days, like 12, 14, and 15. And then, of course, the Democratic National Convention took place on the 22nd of July. So it was about 6 weeks.
Right.
So,
I have a question. Is there anything unusual about, sounds unusual to me that they would hire a private company, CrowdStrike, to investigate this instead of turning straight to the FBI?
Well, it's a really good question. This is one of the major remaining questions, and one that the FBI director, former James Comey, was finding it really hard to explain. You'll recall that when Julian Assange and WikiLeaks released the Hillary Clinton emails 3 days before the Democratic National Convention, there was a hue and cry, and everyone was saying, the headlines and all, why did the Russians do this? Why did the Russians do this? Now, they had been well prepared by leaks from the intelligence community, mm-hmm. indicating that this was likely to be, and the Russians did it. What was missing?
Actually, the preparing of the press, you know, kneading the press, K-N-E-A, like bread, right?
Uh-huh.
Didn't that start with, like, inside the DNC with Jennifer Palmieri, Clinton's PR person, going around in a golf cart during the convention? She's going to the press and selling the Russian hack, the DNC computers line. And she said in a C-SPAN, she was covered on C-SPAN, even she said she really wasn't quite believing it herself, but they just bought it right off the bat. And then she said when they went back to Brooklyn, you know, Clinton's headquarters, right after that, all of a sudden they were getting calls from intelligence people filling in the blanks, you know, and then some press people coming in adding details, and then the Obama administration started confirming. It was like a train, you know, that was of, and again, it echoes like the echo chamber of the run-up to the war in Iraq, you know?
But it's like an echo without a hand clap, right?
Well, yes, exactly. No, but I'm saying
there's no event. There's no there.
In the playbook of dirty tricks, you know, they did it during the run-up to Iraq, and this is the same type of thing that they did here.
Well, isn't this what the CIA dubbed psychological operations, PSYOP?
Yeah, well, they have a whole, you know, the Army's been doing this forever, and the CIA has a whole directorate pretty much, or not directorate, but a division devoted to this kind of thing. The chronology, as you adduce it, is quite correct, Christina. The only thing missing is why they did this. In other words, why they prepared for the eventuality that WikiLeaks would produce these emails from the Democratic National Committee.
Why did they do that?
Well, because the emails, and this was lost in the shuffle, the emails showed that Hillary Clinton and the DNC had stolen the Democratic nomination from Bernie Sanders, pure and simple.
Little detail.
So this was what I, you know, the old movie.
Other than that, we're fine, right?
You know the old movie, A Magnificent Obsession? Well, this is a magnificent diversion. Because they had, from June 12th, when Julian Assange announced he had these emails, until the convention, to be prepared for when they came out and have the press primed to say, why are the Russians?
They just accepted it, bought it hook, line, and sinker. Yeah. Nobody said, where's the evidence? So let's get back to the evidence, Ray.
Is there any doubt in your mind and Bill Binney's mind that this was a download, not a hack, i.e. not a foreign agent, i.e. not Russia? Is there any doubt, or are you 100% certain based on the evidence you've seen?
Well, there are three things now, and you know, I really love it when we have physical things that we can cite, like the principles of physics.
Right.
You know, they don't lie, and they're not mushy like the political analysis that I do, which on one hand it could be done the other way. You know, so let me explain. We believe, in the absence of any evidence to the contrary, which we are firmly convinced NSA would have if it were a hack. See, hacks go over the Internet, and NSA collects everything over the Internet. Leaks are quite different animal. Mm. Leaks of the kind that Julian Assange has been blessed with from all manner of folks, they don't go over the Internet. Now, they go from a computer or a server, into a thumb drive. Everyone knows what a thumb drive is, right?
Yes, everybody knows what a thumb drive is.
Yeah, so that's it's not really even a download in the strict sense of the word. It's a copy from your computer onto the thumb drive, and then we believe that that's how Julian Assange got the DNC emails. That's what we're talking about now, the DNC emails, because that's the big cause.
So what's the evidence that it was a thumb drive as opposed to a hack?
Well, there's another incident that Guccifer 2 has bragged about, and that was an intrusion into the DNC on the 5th of July, so a month later. And as forensic experts looked at the metadata, you know, the information surrounding that intrusion, it was represented to be a hack by the Russians, and it could not have been because the speed with which it was downloaded.
It could not have been a hack by the Russians, you mean?
It could not have been a hack by the Russians or by anybody else, even though, you know, it was represented as such. Because the speed with which it was copied, not downloaded, or if you could use downloaded, I suppose, the speed with which it was put on a thumb drive or some other external storage device was three times, roughly speaking, the capacity of the Internet at that particular point in time, namely 5 July 2016. Now, how do we know that? Well, that's easy. You just look up all the records and you know how quickly these things can be done. Well, what was the speed that it was downloaded at? Well, it happened to be precisely the speed that you could do with a thumb drive, okay? So physically speaking, a copy onto a thumb drive or other external storage device. It was not a hack over the internet.
Now, so somebody was physically in the building, physically put a thumb drive into the computer, the DNC computer, and copied it and sent that to Assange. That's the scenario.
Well, we're talking about two different things here, and it's really important to keep them separate and distinct. This was 5 July, okay?
Yes.
Now, Julian Assange already had, on the 12th of June, the DNC emails.
Right.
That's he announced it. So what we have is a parallel event here. Two copies onto an external storage device for two very different purposes. Now, the one, we don't know exactly who had physical access to the computers in the DNC. We do know that Seth Rich, who was murdered on the 10th of July, 2016, that he did, and there is a strong suspicion that maybe it was he who did it.
Wow.
By the way, you can't mention that in Washington because you will be accused immediately of being a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah, interesting.
And you know, he's just disappeared his case has disappeared from the media.
And what is why do you mention Seth Rich?
Well, if you go back to Julian Assange having these emails on the 12th, the day he announced them. That he announced he had them.
Yes.
And sometime before that, someone had to have given him a thumb drive or some other storage device. Now, Seth Rich was working in the DNC, and he was reported to have been a big, big fan of Bernie Sanders.
All right.
So, yeah. So think of a young fellow, bushy-tailed, you know, he's going, well, Bernie didn't mean it, but no, we'll get Hillary in there. And all of a sudden, he looks at his computer, and he sees that she stole the nomination from Bernie Sanders. I mean, it doesn't take, a crackerjack intelligence analyst to conclude that maybe he thought, well, you know, this really.
Well, he's on the list of potentials is what I'd say. He's a person of interest, I'd say. You know, I mean, I also think it's interesting that when Assange was asked about Seth Rich and if Seth Rich was his source, he said he did not say no. He said, we don't divulge our sources. But WikiLeaks is offering a $20,000 reward for any information leading to a suspect in the case.
That's right. And he also said, that is, Julian Assange also said, and this is a virtual quote, this shows the dangers encountered by those who would blow the whistle in such cases, end quote.
Whoa.
So, you know, now Julian never divulges his sources. When I first heard that, I said, well, you know, the guy's dead, right? So maybe Julian is going to, first and only time, divulge his sources. But then he clammed up and said, no, we don't divulge sources, just like you said. And he said, he wants the reward. Well, there aren't any other people or any other individuals that I know that could have done that, but there are, you know, hundreds working in that DNC apparatus, and it wouldn't have had to been at headquarters, you know, the way computers work these days. We thought that the metadata indicated it was done in the Eastern time zone, but we subsequently got indications that there was activity in the Midwest time zone and the Pacific time zone. So it doesn't matter really where exactly it was down. It was copied onto a storage device. We know that it was. Now, so people understand here, on 5 July, it looks like the emails that were downloaded, really copied onto an external storage device, and then published, they were innocuous. They weren't damning like the ones that Julian had. So it looks very much to us like an attempt to say, oh, look, Guccifer is on the ball,
right.
And here again on the 5th.
Guccifer is back, be afraid, be very afraid, but who is Guccifer?
Well, that's the big question. Now, we asked the president, what's his name, Trump, in July, our memo is July 24 of 2017, we said, you really ought to ask the CIA and the FBI who Guccifer 2.0 is. You might want to look into some of the other things that have been released. Now, most people know that Bill Binney, who I mentioned before, former technical director at NSA, was invited to talk to the head of the CIA, who at the time was Pompeo. And the first thing...
About his findings on the forensic evidence?
Correct.
Oh, mm-hmm. Okay.
So, we never know if the president or his associates read our memos, but this one was read, whether directly by the president. We suspect somebody gave it to him. And he said, this is interesting. He called Pompeo and said, have this Binney fellow come talk to him. So the first thing Pompeo says, Mr. Binney, I'm very happy to meet you. I want to make clear that I am interviewing you at the express wish of the President of the United States. And Bill Binney said, well, that's very good. And I said, now, what's going on? So Bill doesn't mince words. So Bill says, well, I wanted to tell you, Mr. Director, that your people are lying to you.
Binney said it outright. I want to tell you that your people are lying to you.
That's great.
Wow. So, wow. What was the response?
Why would you say that? And so Bill explained the situation and took him through the thing. And in half an hour, wove the tale together as Bill knows better than anyone else. And then get this, Pompeo says, it's hard to believe that, So Bill says, all you have to do is ask him to come up with the evidence. If they've got evidence, if they're hackers, ask them.
Right.
Well, he says, do you know the people in the FBI?
Oh, boy.
My goodness.
I don't understand why Pompeo couldn't pick up his phone and call the FBI himself.
I also don't understand why Mueller can't get on a plane and go interview Julian Assange. And there's a lot of missing.
They want to arrest him and throw him out and throw him into the darkness forever.
Everybody's staying under their own street lamp, looking for what they want to look for.
Exactly.
Under their street lamp.
That's exactly right. That's the best way to put it.
Totally incoherent.
It's funny. We were talking about this before. How this is evidence in search of somebody who will take it. This evidence that you've come up with, you're in search of. It would be great if Mueller would say, "Hey, my God, send this to us. We're interested." But clearly, he's not interested. So we were talking about quoting Celia's father, who said, your evidence is like an orgasm in search of a wedding.
That's one of my father's favorite quotes. An orgasm in search of a wedding.
I mean, come on. I mean, here it is. Here's the forensic evidence. Where's the press? Where's Mueller?
Where's anything?
Where are the investigators? And I think if you look at the whole timeline, Ray, well, first of all, get back to what you were saying about Guccifer. Let's get back to Guccifer because, again, there's some very compelling circumstantial evidence that you have, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, let me pick up where I left off just for a second here with Binney before he said goodbye to Pompeo. I think Pompeo wasn't really interested either, although by all rights you would think he should be. Especially since the president seemed to be interested. But he says, do you know somebody in the FBI? And Bill says, well, yeah, last time I had any contact with the FBI, there were 12 guys raided my house at 6 o'clock in the morning, and push guns into my wife's face and my son's face. And I'm in a shower, and the shower curtain parts, and they just stuck the gun right in my face. And
He was in the shower. That's right. I've seen the film.
This is our new national security state.
This is unbelievable.
Well, yeah.
And look what just happened to Stone. This could happen to you, too, dear listener.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what they're trying to say.
For practically next to nothing.
Anybody know the name of the fellow who led the FBI in those days?
No.
His name was Bob Mueller.
Wow. Bob Mueller ordered those guns to be put in Benny's face?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, heavens, I didn't know that.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
There were four of them raided that morning all at the same time. The three NSA folks and the very, very, how shall I call her? She's courageous.
Diane Rourke.
Tenacious. Yeah, Diane Rourke. She was the House Intelligence Committee staffer with purview over NSA's activities. And she saw what was going on over there and how NSA was grossly violating the Fourth Amendment. And she went through her own people, and of course, Porter Goss, who was setting up the committee at the time, he didn't want to hear any of that, and so she was known to be someone who was opposed to these violations of the Fourth Amendment. Now, so what happened was this: James Risen got information on this dragnet blanket surveillance that they were doing on American people here in this country, not only citizens but green card holders and so forth, and he got that information about
James Risen is a reporter. He was a reporter for the New York Times. Yes.
Right. So he has the great sources. So he heard about the whoops. All of a sudden, the Fourth Amendment's out of the they call it the President's Surveillance Program. Then they changed the name. And so he wanted to run the story, and his betters at the New York Times said, well, you can't do that. And he said, my God, why can't I do it? Well, it's just four months before the election. We can't put something that explosive out 4 months before the election.
This is crazy.
Come again? Now, this was, Jane, it'll come to me. She was the Washington Bureau chief.
But wait a second. We're getting off track here. We're getting off track here because we were talking about
Pompeo.
We were talking about Pompeo, and then we were talking about Guccifer and getting to who Guccifer was.
Right.
But before we get to Guccifer, can I just go back to Pompeo for a minute? So Benny, when he met Pompeo, walked away feeling, it sounds like, a little bit like there were no real takers. They weren't really interested. That is stunning.
So do you think they just wanted to know what he knew?
Well, Pompeo gave him the distinct impression that he could care less, that he was only seeing Benny because the president instructed him to.
Oh, okay.
And that he was either...
He was doing a due diligence.
So it's a dead end with Pompeo, but why wouldn't the president... Oh, this is just bizarre. The president himself should be most interested in
why isn't the
Bill
president
Benny.
Interested?
Well, why isn't the president? Is he in on this thing? Too?
Why
this
is he so not crazy. Interested in this forensic evidence?
And a lot of people are saying, is he even interested in defending himself or anything?
The answer to that is very simple. The president is afraid.
Oh, Chuck Schumer had mentioned that.
Of the deep state. So he's in this foggy dance, too, like stay in the fog.
The president is not in charge. This is relevant, and I'll try to be brief. But back when the deep state, and these are the main features of the deep state, CIA, FBI, NSA, and the Justice Department.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
After, they had tried as hard as they could to get Hillary elected and to make sure Trump didn't get elected.
And let's be clear, the main players, the main deep state players here were like Mueller, Comey, Srock and Page, and who else? Loretta Lynch.
Yeah, Loretta Lynch was the Attorney General, of course.
Yes.
And the main players are John Brennan at
John
CIA,
Brennan at the CIA.
And James Comey at the FBI. And, what really bothers me is that most Americans have no idea of how this is documentary evidence on this, that the deputy head of the counterintelligence unit of the FBI had this romance with the top lawyer for the deputy director, McCabe.
Peter Strzok. Yeah, that was Peter Strzok.
Yeah, Peter Strzok was the name of the
Strzok
guy.
Strzok and Lisa Page.
Yeah, and they texted each other several hundred times a day. Can you believe it? It's on a record.
So
they discussed all manner of things.
Both of them married to other people, by the way.
Yeah.
These are fine, upstanding people.
So it's all pretty clear. Now, Comey let Strzok run the investigation, in quotes, of Hillary Clinton's email violations.
Right.
And you remember the curious way that Comey took over, didn't even let Loretta Lynch pronounce on it, but said, no, this was bad behavior, but not...
He presided over that. I mean, the number of laws that she broke, and it's interesting. I was just reading Greg Jarrett's book, The Illicit Scheme to Clear Hillary Clinton and Frame Donald Trump. He really does a good chapter and verse on the laws that she broke while she was doing her pay for play with the her Clinton Foundation. And, you know, Bill going out and getting huge speaking fees and, you know, then money being funneled to the foundation while, you know, she's making stuff happen as Secretary of State. I mean, it's so shocking. It's just unbelievable. And it's weird because what it looks like they did was they took her crime and they're trying to, like, pin it on him. You know, it's like Saul Alinsky's rules for radical...
Right.
Rules for radicals accuse your opponent of what you yourself are guilty of.
Yeah, there's a lot of inversion here. A lot.
Yeah,
go ahead.
There's the best defense or the best offense is. They went on the offensive. Let's put it that way, and it was very clear in these text messages. Now, when I speak around the country to very progressive audiences, I've averaged it out. About 7% of my audience have even heard of these text exchanges between these two very high-level officials. At one point, Peter Strzok says, I've been investigating this Russiagate thing now for 7 months, Lisa, and now Bob Mueller's come back in, and he wants me to work on it some more, and I don't fucking do that. And she says, well, don't you want to do that? He says, well... No, Lisa, because there's no big there.
Meaning Russiagate is nothing. There's no there to Russiagate.
It's
nothing.
And Ray, you said, what is, share with our listening audience your suggestion for a better name for Russiagate. What should it be called?
Well, Deep State Gate or FBI Gate. The real crimes that have been committed here are the ones that now will be covered up by the Democrats in the House committees. They're provable crimes. And when Devin Nunes, the congressman from the Central Valley of California, when he was asked this time last year if these people are found to have been committed crimes or are indicted, will they be brought to trial? He, on a TV show, said, You better believe they're going to be put on trial.
He told Cheryl Atkinson, she's a whistleblower, CBS whistleblower. He told her yes, they would be brought. But
right, he said. Yeah. So the stakes are very high. Now, one thing that people throw back at you is say, oh, now wait a second, Hillary blamed James Comey for her loss. So how do you when he told Congress that he was reopening the investigation just the week, 10 days before the election, she thinks that did her in. How can you say that James Comey wanted her to win? Well, it's real easy. And, as an all-source analyst, you have to read all kinds of stuff, including books that people like James Comey write, It's a chore, but you do it, okay? And in this book, he says, look, we were all convinced that the next president of the United States was going to be Hillary Clinton. And we were operating in that environment. And so when when the computer was found for, what was this, Wiener's computer was found in New York, you know, I was, I didn't want to, well, I promised Congress that I would let them know if there was additional things to be investigated, but we were sure she was going to win. And I was afraid that if people learned later that we didn't investigate Wiener's computer, then she would start her reign as president under a cloud. And so so that's why I did it. In other words, she was sure to win. So if I just let
better be nice to Hillary because she's going to be next president.
Yeah. No. So, yeah. So, you know, it's really easily explainable. The thing that I didn't mention, which was equally operative, is that the New York feds, the FBI guys in New York, were fit to be tied, because they had discovered Wiener's computer, on which there were all kinds of stuff from Huma Abedin, his wife, and Hillary Clinton, some of it highly classified, a month before the election. A month, okay?
Wow.
And who sat on them? Peter Strzok. He didn't want anybody to look into those. No. So there was a virtual revolt about to happen in the New York office of the FBI. They were going to leak. This is crazy. You promised that you'd reopen the investigation. You're not doing it. And so, in my view, that's at least as operative a reason.
I mean, this is a conspiracy to undermine a federal investigation. I mean, literally, that's what. And by the way, let's talk about Mueller and his background. Talk a little bit about Mueller's background and what Colleen Rowley said about him.
Well, there are lots of people who worked for Mueller and tell the truth about him. Colleen Rowley was the division counsel in the Minneapolis office of the FBI before 9/11 and then through that period. She wrote two memos to Mueller about how the brass of the FBI in Washington had screwed up royally. That they had this fellow Mousavi, who was going to be one of the pilots of one of these planes.
For 9/11, yeah.
Yeah, and they were not allowed to look into his computer, much less interrogate him. And so that could have, you know, that would have stopped the conspiracy right off the bat. All they would have had to do is say, we got him, and he's told us what was going to happen, even if he didn't tell him at that point. So she wrote a memo, which was very polite, but saying, this is, you know, you have to look into this. This is really, really a problem. And then when she saw him, and she got nothing, of course, when she saw him join the crowd for weapons of mass destruction.
Mueller.
Before Iraq, Mueller, yeah. When she saw him testify of supporting the other liars, George Tenet first and foremost, the head of the CIA, that there were weapons of mass destruction and ties between Iraq and Al-Qaeda. You see, this is really important. Before the war, before we attacked Iraq, 69% of the American people believed not only that there were WMD, weapons of mass destruction, in Iraq, but also that Saddam Hussein had something to do with 9/11.
Right.
Now, that's big, okay? So she told him, she says in this memo, she said, if you have evidence of that, you really ought to adduce it and at least tell us in the FBI,
right,
because everyone else that we believe, the honest people who are around are saying that that's manufactured.
There's no evidence, exactly. Yeah.
So he covered, not only did he applaud or root for the war, but then he covered up all his FBI mistakes after the war. He's a real, real cover-up artist, and he's done lots of stuff. I mentioned what under his authorization happened to Bill Binney and his three compatriots. What I didn't mention there is that Bob Mueller and the FBI knew that it was not Bill Binney. It was not his three associates that leaked the
story. So they knew even before they sent in those guys to put the gun. Jesus.
Yes, and that's demonstrably true, and Bill Binney has put it in an affidavit in a court case. So they knew that it was, yeah, and a court would follow suing the FBI.
Well, we're very interested in hearing about that court case.
We only have a few minutes left. I wonder if I could ask you for just a few chosen words.
Wait, because I think the marble, the Guccifer thing is, we've got to get to that, and you've got do it as fast as you can, Ray.
Okay,
the Guccifer stuff, the marble. Yeah. What's it called? Marble
framework.
Marble framework. As fast as you can, Ray.
John Brennan set up a separate directorate at the CIA for cyber warfare. Now, a directorate's a big deal. It's thousands of people. He inherited a lot of people from NSA. And they worked on these tools, these offensive cyber tools, for many years. As a matter of fact, Bill Binney was still around when they started this cooperation. Now, someone put an external storage device into a CIA computer, downloaded all the information on what's called Marble Framework, the assortment of tools available, gave them to WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks published the first tranche on the 7th of March.
Vault 7.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. They called it Vault 7, and Marble Framework was just one of the tools within Vault 7. Now, what does Marble Framework do? Well, it allows you to hack into a computer or a server, disguise who hacked in, and obfuscate who hacked it. In other words,
make it look like somebody else. Make it look like somebody did.
Does that sound familiar? They worked in five languages, okay? Russian, with Cyrillic, Russian, Chinese, Persian, Arabic, and Korean. And the data, which nobody claims is not authentic, shows that this tool was used during 2016.
Oh.
Now, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to step back and say, we don't know anything about this Guccifer 2, but could it be that this tool was used to try to put the blame on Russia for this ostensible hacking?
Interesting. We're running out of time,
right? Yeah, it's crushing to be running out of time. Will you come back and talk to us again? This is all so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to press you for just one word or two about your response to Roger Stone's arrest, the paramilitary arrest.
Well, Stone is not to be taken seriously.
But the nature of the arrest.
Oh, you mean
how they did it?
Well, they used the same tactics on Bill Binney and the rest of them. You know, pre-dawn or 6 o'clock, armed people, 12 or 16 of them, one of them with a helmet.
Mueller style, right?
Yeah. And I said to Bill, I said, does that remind you of something? He says, it sure as hell does. He says, the only thing was that they wanted to do us in secret, so there were no CNN people there. They knew that they were violating the law, and they were. That's why they never...
Well, they're violating quite a few laws, you know, well, even before then.
He's got a very relaxed attitude toward the Constitution and the law. And
We got to wrap up, yeah. Ray.
All right.
You know, we love you. We want you back.
Please come back. Thank you so much. It was such an honor to talk to you.
It was a real pleasure talking to you, Ray.